evening, Dr. Stan, back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we ask that you hold your calls for the time being, because, of course, we have with us a special guest tonight. His name is Alan Quist, and he's, of course, taught at the university level. He's been in teaching for many, many years. But, of course, in recent years, he and his wife, Julie, have been working to try to educate the American people about what's really happening to education. Now, certainly as an educator, he sees the end product of education at the university, wherever he's teaching. But, you know, of course, you have to understand that we have a new program in America. It's called No Child Left Behind. And what that really means is we're not going to give any child a chance to have normal values or belief in God or family and country. We have a new federal program that is going, of course, to demand that, of course, the teaching at the local level be oriented to the new paradigm, where, of course, we change their attitude towards God, family, and country. And we do this through a testing process. And, of course, if the schools fail to alter the child's perspective and world outlook, why, of course, the teachers and the schools will be punished. And this is really what it's all about. And it is the most incredible thing. I remember when we met with George Bush when he was still the governor. And I looked at him and I said, "Governor, how do you feel about outcome-based education?" He looked at me and he said, "You know, I opposed it. I kept that out of Texas." Of course, the truth of the matter was he brought it in by executive order, and there were only a few of us in the room who knew that. But, of course, he said, "What I want to do is return control of education to the local school board, to the parent." Now, that's exactly what I believe probably every parent in America would like. But they don't understand that words have very little to do with actions. There is a difference between reality and what's our perception. And we're ruled by our perceptions. We want to believe. But the truth of the matter is there have been more loss of freedom in education in the last 3 years than ever before in the history of our nation. Alan, why don't you tell us about A No Child Left Behind, this new federal program, and what it's going to mean to the children of America.
Okay, well, thank you, Dr. Stan. No Child Left Behind, first of all, is a massive bill, and the implications are enormous. They're enormous for every school in the country, especially public, of course, but they have also major implications for private schools and homeschools. And it has a huge impact on our country, on our families, on our children, on our parents, on our school boards, and the like. And let me just begin with the understanding that all Americans should have, namely that the 10th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution specifies that the federal government is to have only those powers delegated to it by the Constitution, and the other powers not given to the federal government are reserved for the states and the people, respectively. So in government, which I teach, what we're talking about are the delegated powers, those given to the Congress, and the reserved powers, those kept for the states and the people. And education is one of the reserved powers. It's kept for the states and the local units of government and for the people. And for the federal government to play a role in education, a significant role in education, is to be in direct violation of the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and therefore the document that more than anything else is set up to protect our freedom as citizens, to protect our basic rights, God-given rights, and so on. And so this has to be the overall understanding that we're talking about federal government essentially taking over education the basics of it in violation of the Constitution.
And, of course, we know that central planning doesn't, of course, work in Russia, and it's not going to work here, but they know that. And those of you who have heard our programs with Charlotte Isabey, she will tell you that in the early 80s, when she was, of course, one of the senior analysts at the Department of Education, why, of course, the United States signed contracts with the Soviet Union to merge our educational system into one, the whole idea of centralized planning and, of course, systematically dumbing down the children so they will be willing to live in this wonderful new utopia that they're planning of, Plato's concept, with a ruling elite, a massive police force, of course, in the name of fighting terrorism, and then, of course, everybody else, simply common folks, as we change the attitude towards God and family and country. So basically, of course, how are they going to go about forcing the local schools to go along with the federal agenda of altering the child's perspective towards patriotism and towards internationalism?
There are all kinds of ways. On the one hand, No Child Left Behind specifies essentially that any states that do not participate along the guidelines set up by the federal government, that those states will lose their federal education funding. And we don't know to what degree that extends to various vocational programs that the federal government has, but it may extend to all vocational programs too, those that have been set up largely for retraining adult workers. So we're talking about what something like 10% of the money that states have for their schools. It might be more than that, but it's something in that ballpark.
Now, they were to be punished then if they don't go along with the program. Or
that's
don't
right. Every state would be punished. And, of course, if we could get the states together and if all states said, well, we're going to follow the Constitution, and, of course, it's our tax money. You know, it belongs to every person. It doesn't belong to the federal government. If we could get every state together, we could have some clout in opposing it. But this is what the federal government does, you know, to force it on the states. And so, I mean, on the one hand, the federal government says that it's voluntary. And on the other hand, it says, oh, by the way, if you don't comply, you're going to lose 10% of your education funding. So this is the kind of double talk that that we get. So that's on the one hand, the club of federal funding. On the other hand, the federal government has established a federal curriculum. And this is what I describe in my book, FedEd, the New Federal Curriculum and How It's Enforced. And so part of the whole agenda of No Child Left Behind is to stipulate the values, the attitudes, the beliefs, and the actions, along with some academic content, but it's heavy on values and beliefs, determining what every child is going to be taught in our country. And because of the influence of the federal government, it has been able to, for the most part, get the textbook companies to revise their textbooks to conform to this radical worldview. And by the way, I have been teaching at Bethany College really off and on, but mostly on, for the last, basically the last 38 years. And the difference in the textbooks before 1994, when the federal government took over, and after 1994 is profound. And by the way, if anybody wants to look at the difference in the textbooks, they could read Diane Ravitch's new book on the language police, where she talks about how there are all kinds of words that you can't use in education now, including a textbook. And she quotes from the guidelines that textbook companies have just on language. What she doesn't say is that the reason, and she says, by the way, that this came in like a flood in the late 1990s. What she doesn't say is that the reason the textbooks changed is because the federal government basically took over the curriculum. And so,
of course, I don't think the average individual really understands the implications. No longer is the parent have anything to say. No longer is the local school board or even the state have anything to say. It will all be directed from the elite in Washington, D.C. And I think it's so important people understand what they're doing to the curriculum, because they're changing the perspective of the worldview of the students, aren't they?
Absolutely. Let me just give you one example of how that works. There's a bill before Congress right now. It's the Lamar Alexander bill, which would further implement the federal curriculum, because it would allocate $200 million, our tax money, that's one-fifth of $1 billion, to set up what's called presidential academies. And these are federal government schools schools now, okay, total violation of 10th Amendment, in order to teach history and civics and government. And so I look at this bill and I see what the language says, and one of the terms that's in the bill is the term a pluribus unum. That's on all our coins, it's on our national seal, it's on our dollar bill, and that's Latin, which means out of many one. And of course, historically, that term has meant out of many ethnic groups, out of people from Norway, out of people from Spain, out of people who are indigenous to our country, out of people from Africa. We have blended together in a melting pot and made one unified nation. Historically, that's what the term means. But the federal curriculum has totally redefined that term. And it's redefined in the textbook called We the People, written by our tax money, directed by federal law. And in that textbook, a pluribus unum means, the Latin means out of many one, but it doesn't mean in the textbook out of many peoples is made one America. Oh, no. The way it's used is to mean out of many countries and out of many ethnic groups around the world is made now one world unified federalism or one world government.
And of course, this is the continuation of that dream of Alfred Lord Tennyson, who wrote about when the war drums throbbed no longer and the battle flags were furled in the Parliament of Man, the Federation of the World, this idea of a world federation, a one world government. Tennyson wrote that back in 1842, and yet it's been the rallying cry for those who would destroy the sovereignty of this country and give us the same freedoms that exist in communist China and in Hong Kong and in South Vietnam, because once we lose our national sovereignty, why, we are way outnumbered by dictatorships throughout the world. And anybody who thinks that we are going to provide freedom to the countries of the rest of the world need only, of course, look at the freedom we brought to the people in Rhodesia when we installed our man. His name was Mugabe. The freedom we brought to South Africa when we put in our man, Nelson Mandela, and of course now South Africa is the murder capital of the world. The freedom we brought to Vietnam when we abandoned the people there. The freedom, of course, we brought to the North Koreans when we abandoned them to the mercies of Kim Il-sung. So, you know, the Americans really don't understand that we financed the dictatorship in communist China, and we're still financing it. We financed the dictatorship in Russia. We're still financing it. And the ultimate plan is not, of course, to give people throughout the world freedom, but to install a ruling elite. And, of course, they know exactly what they're doing. Uniting the world, doing away with American sovereignty means the end of freedom as we've known it. And yet, do they teach the children that? Do they teach them that they will lose their freedom? Or do they give them the false hope that somehow or other they're going to be able to preserve the American way of life as we merge with other nations?
Well, everything is sugar-coated, of course, and the U.S. Bill of Rights is always put in a very negative light. The rights in the Bill of Rights are described as being, for instance, negative rights, as opposed to what are called positive rights, such as in the UN document, which is called the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And so in the federal curriculum, for instance, the Bill of Rights is undermined, and instead of the Bill of Rights, then the Universal Declaration is touted. The Universal Declaration is a UN document put together now about 55 years ago, 1948, and this UN document ends with the statement, second to last paragraph, that none of these rights may be exercised contrary to the practices and policies of the United Nations.
But of course, then you are given your rights by government, then they can take them away, whereas in America, our rights come from God, and the Bill of Rights was a restrictive covenant, and its purpose was to restrict, of course, what happened. Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or abridging the free exercise thereof. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be abridged. Sure, it was a negative document. It was to limit the power of government over the people so they could be free. And once government, of course, guarantees your rights, government can take away your rights. And actually, if you read the Soviet Constitution, you have all of these rights. You have them in China, too. But just try, of course, to claim them.
That's right, and in Cuba, you can read all these rights in the Constitution of Cuba, but the Constitution of Cuba then says that none of these rights may be exercised contrary to the policies of the socialist state of Cuba, which is the communist government.
And of course, once we have this world government, why, we'll have the same vote, America will have the same vote as the Cubans do. And of course,
that's correct. The people that propose it, by the way, the UN Commission on Global Governance publishes all kinds of things on how this would be set up, and I have some of the books put out by the UN Commission on Global Governance, and in these books, some of them are collections of essays, the One Worlders discuss how the world government will be set up. And usually, the most common recommendation is that you have two bodies, kind of like we have here, a House and a Senate, and one body would give every nation one vote, which means then that we have, that Cuba has as much clout in this country as we do. Sweden has the same clout. South Africa has the same clout.
And the island of Tonga would have the same vote as well.
That's right. And so then the other body would be by population, which means that communist China in this body would have roughly five times as much clout as the United States, and the countries in Africa, collectively, which have very little influence in the world, would have something like 10 times the clout of the United States. And so, you know, no matter how you look at it, the United States would be would have very little influence and would be under the control of other people. And we have to keep in mind, too, the way this is set up is you always have people at the top that are pulling the strings and are orchestrating things. And these people at the top are the top officials of the UN. And so it would not be a republic or a democracy in any meaningful sense of the word. But of course, the students are never told this. The students are given the platitudes. World citizenship is touted all the time. We have to get rid of national citizenship, and we have to have world citizenship. Well, of course, that sounds good, until you start thinking what that means. And of course, what it means, as you say, Dr. Stan, is that we lose our freedom. In my government classes, I teach my students that there's one primary dividing line between freedom and tyranny. And that primary dividing line is this, that in a free country, the rights of every person, and this is the right to life, the right to property, freedom, equality before the law, and the like, that the rights of every person have a higher value, a higher priority than government. And that's the way our Declaration set up our country. The Declaration says that government exists to protect the human rights of every person. That means the human rights are at the top and government is one step down. In tyranny, it's the actions of government that are always at the top, and whatever rights people have are one step down. It's whatever the government wants to allow people to exercise. But that's always the case in a tyranny, that government's at the top and people's rights, interests, and so on are one step down. Well, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which would be the foundational document insofar as human rights for one world government, puts the UN world government at the top and human rights one step down, and that is by definition, a tyrannical system.
And that, of course, is what this new system that is being pushed by the current administration is really all about. And, of course, you need to get Alan's book. It's called Fed Ed, and, of course, the foreword is written by Phyllis Schlafly. And ordinarily, of course, when you write a foreword to a book, you always give a glowing account. This is one of the finest books and so important. And, I read Phyllis's explanation. I said, oh, yes, this is Phyllis is being very nice when she said this is one of the most important books of our time. And then I read the book, and Phyllis was absolutely right. You need to get this book. It's inexpensive. You need to read it. You need to understand what is going on. And then you need to help us get the word out. Because if the American people don't understand that the people who talk about no child left behind, returning, of course, control of education to the parents and to the local communities and to the school board, have a different agenda. And that is the loss of American sovereignty, the destruction of our constitutional guarantees of freedom, and the end of America as we've known it. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest is Alan Quist. His book is FedEd. If you haven't read it, shame on you. You need to get it, and of course it's available through Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. We'll tell you how to get the book. It's must reading for everybody in this audience. You need to understand what they're doing to our children. You need to understand that very often people will say what you want to hear, but of course do what they intend to do. And what we're seeing is the end of a long-range planning. And, of course, in the final stages, the ultimate target is the minds of the children, because they will control the next generation. And so they actually have an educational program where they're going to glorify the United Nations, the UN, a Declaration of Human Rights, and disparage our Constitution, and, of course, our outmoded form of individual freedom. And, of course, young, impressionable people so often follow their teachers. Being a teacher is a terrible responsibility, isn't it, Alan?
It really is. And I enjoy that responsibility because I understand the principles our country was founded on, and I recognize how important they are, how critical they are, and I love to teach them. But at the same time, you know, I deal with students that have been indoctrinated with an awful lot of bad stuff, false ideas, and so sometimes I think I'm more of a deprogrammer, Dr. Stan, than a teacher. But let me mention, too, just a little bit about the book FedEd, because there probably are about a half a dozen book reviews out on this now. One of the latter ones was written by the Von Mises Institute, which is a very scholarly institute from Mountain California. But one of the first couple was written by townhall.com, and people want to read a review of the book. I think it's still on there, townhall.com.
Where is it, Amazon?
Well, it's, I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, where is the review?
But just townhall.com.
Townhall.com. Okay.
Townhall.com, and you can get the review. Anyway, the reviewer before reading the book, wasn't familiar with what was happening with the federal government, the federal curriculum, and so on. And so she's, in the beginning of the review, she says, boy, you know, I never heard any of this before, this notion of the federal government establishing a curriculum, and that what the curriculum is, that it's terribly anti-American, and that it's calculated to really to undermine the basic principles that have made us a free nation. So she thought, boy, this sounds kind of far out. So she started checking, and she started going to my sources, which I cite, and everything is documented in the book. And this isn't, the book is not my opinion. It's just, I just quote from the sources, from the law and from the federal standards and things like that. And anyway, she said, I started checking the sources, and guess what? I found out that what Professor Quist was saying was all true. And she then gave a very solid recommendation for the book. Every review that I'm aware of, like say there are probably half a dozen out, have been very positive because people recognize that what I'm saying is not my opinion, it's just documented fact, and this is what's happening. And the American public needs to know.
And
of course,
they're being consistently lied to. That's the problem. You're being lied to by the media. You're being lied to by your leaders. You're being lied to by your elected officials, most of them who don't even understand what's going on. And even many good elected congressmen and senators are backing this legislation and some of this new legislation setting up these institutes, these 20 institutes, because they're being told by the administration, this is going to further the idea of no child left behind.
That's right, and they're told that these new educational institutions set up by the federal government are going to teach the Bill of Rights.
We're going to hold on just a moment, and we'll find out what he's talking about. And so, Professor Quist is saying they're telling the congressmen, they're telling everybody why we're going to teach the Bill of Rights at these institutes, and who's against, of course, instruction in the Bill of Rights, but what are they going to teach them about the Bill of Rights? That's the important thing.
Well, that's exactly right. And again, what I say to people is you better look at the federal curriculum because that's what's going to be taught. And the attitude towards the Bill of Rights in the federal curriculum, first of all, is very negative. And then secondly, the federal curriculum takes the position that the Bill of Rights was a document of the 19th century, that it reflected the values of the people at that time, and it fit the people of that time pretty well, but then was then, and now is now, and 200 years later, we're much more cosmopolitan, we're much more in tune with the rest of the world, and we want to be like the other countries of the world. We want to be with it, and so the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is clearly far superior to the Bill of Rights today. And so that's what it teaches about the Bill of Rights. The question isn't teaching what the Bill of Rights says. The question is the attitudes and values, the belief system, the worldview, and the attending behavior that is taught. And that is all the radical views of the far left that wants to disband the national freedom of our country.
But now, wait a minute. The far left, I mean, we supposedly have a Republican administration in now of conservatives. Why are they pushing the agenda of the far left?
Well, it is interesting. You know, I think that there are some of them who are honestly misled, and I don't know how many there are. But I think some of them are honestly misled by the language. Certainly, this is what we found out in Minnesota when Minnesota was, you know, was adopting and promoting all of these things. And so, our organization, Maple River, and it's people can read it. Reach us, edwatch.org. Our organization started forming the public and started informing legislators about what was happening. It took us 5 years. First, when we told legislators what these bills meant, they said, oh, no, it can't be true. But eventually, they heard from constituents. Constituents quoted them the bills. Constituents went and met with them and showed them the bills, showed them the laws, and all of a sudden, they started to listen. And after 5 years of effort here in Minnesota, we basically threw out the federal curriculum, and we're now putting in some pro-American standards. We're the first state out of 50 states that has thrown out the federal curriculum. And so we found in Minnesota that there were quite a few good people who had no idea what these things meant. But as soon as we were able to show them the truth, and by the way, truth always precedes freedom, and the radicals know it, when we showed them what was true, then they were willing to start making some changes.
Now, you mentioned your website, and I want to, you just said it very quickly, edwatch.com, is that right?
Edwatch.org, that's
edwatch.org.
Right. Edwatch.org. That's right.
Get Alan's material. He and this Maple River Educational Coalition, Mr. Edco, outstanding material. So edwatch.org. And, of course, you want to get his book, you want to get this information, and then you better get involved because your children and your grandchildren, they're after their heart and their mind and their soul, and they're going to do it through the public schools.
So good indication of what will happen when, you know, when legislators get some sense of what the truth is, and especially if they know, if the public understands what the truth is. A good indication of that is back in 1995 when the National History Standards, now this is that part, the history part of the federal curriculum, when the National History Standards was put up for a vote in the U.S. Senate. And that's because, interestingly enough, Lynn Cheney and some of her associates started letting people know how terrible the history standards were. 1995, the history standards were put up for a vote. And the U.S. Senate, the history standards went down on a vote of 99-0. That's not because all the senators recognized how bad they were, but they recognized that the public had a sense of how bad they were. So what happened then was 1 year later, and the people that wrote the standards only took out some of the examples. They didn't change the substance of the standards at all. They only took out some of the examples, and then pressure was put on the right people, so that it never came up for a vote again. And so it was just implemented by the U.S. Department of Education under then President Bill Clinton and never came up for a vote. But that indicates how terrible they are and what can happen if you can get it to the public attention.
In other words, you got to the public attention, the Senate voted against it, and then, of course, they implemented it anyway. And, of course, isn't that what democracy is all about?
That's the way it works.
And you have to understand that in a democracy, while the leaders can do whatever they want to under one guise or another, in a republic, you have a nation of law. And, of course, you have to abide by those laws, and neither the executive nor the judicial nor the legislative can violate those laws. For fear that, of course, they'll be exposed for the corrupt people that they are. That's why our founding fathers gave us a republic and not a democracy. Isn't it a shame that most people don't even know the difference between the two? We'll be right back here with Alan Quist. Invite your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Alan Quist, and of course we're talking about his book, FedEd, and about the new educational standards, about these new institutes that are being set up. There's new legislation to set up 10 institutes across America for teachers, 10 for the elite of the students, the best of the students, because they want to indoctrinate the leaders of the next generation with these ideas of one world government, hatred for America and everything it stands for, and of course, then altering our way of life. And what do they do as far as the idea of absolutes or the belief in God? How do they handle that, Alan?
Well, it's like so many other things, out of sight is out of mind, and it just is never included. It's just not part of the picture.
What do they do with the Declaration of Independence, which says we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men were created equal and endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, and that governments are instituted among men to preserve these rights?
That's right, and in the first paragraph you have the laws of nature and of nature's God. Natural law. And so the Declaration of Independence is very emphatic about our nation being a nation under God, based on God's principles for rights and so on. And so the way they do that is, let me just give as an example, this bill that's now before Congress that sets up these presidential academies and would spend $200 million on them has a section where it calls key ideas. And I'm just going to read for the listeners how the key ideas are defined. And I quote, "The term key ideas means the ideas that shaped the democratic institutions and heritage of the United States, including," okay, now they're going to list 10 key ideas, and here are the 10. I'm going to read them. "The notions of liberty, equal opportunity, individualism, laissez-faire, the rule of law, federalism, a pluribus unum, the free exercise of religion, separation of church and state, and a belief in progress." Those are the 10. Now notice what is not there. And one of the things that's not there is that there's no mention of God-given rights. There's no mention of natural law, the law of nature and of nature's God. There is no mention of God at all. There's no mention of God giving us rights. Notice also that there's no mention of national sovereignty. The Declaration of Independence begins with national sovereignty. That's where it starts. It ends with national sovereignty. It defends national sovereignty on the basis of God-given rights, also absent. And so of these 10 things that they list, you compare that to the Declaration of Independence. The Declaration of Independence also has 10 key ideas, beginning with national sovereignty. The list in the bill has 2 of the 10. It omits 8. And of the 2 that it includes in a very weakened, shrunken form. So they don't amount to much. And so this is the kind of distortion that you get. But it's out of sight, out of mind. The really big principles, like national sovereignty and God-given rights, are simply omitted. And then if you leave those things out, Dr. Stan, you can set the stage for world federalism and all kinds of radical stuff very easily.
And of course, you know, a lot of people will say, what's wrong with a world government? Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could just do away with wars and of course, all live together in peace? Why can't we all get along together, as Rodney King said? But of course, the problem is that once we have lost our God-given rights, once we've lost our national sovereignty, once we've lost the protections of our Constitution, there is no freedom any longer. And of course, under the United Nations, they will control what the newspapers can print. Here, occasionally you'll read the truth in the newspapers, not too often, but at least it can be printed. Under the UNESCO, the reason that President Reagan got out of that 20 years ago was because they said that newspapers couldn't print only what the government wanted. People don't understand this idea of tyranny from above, which is the very essence of the United Nations, because the majority of the rulers of the world who make up the United Nations are dictators.
You know, that's exactly right. Now, Dr. Stan, let me insert some just a little ray of good news at this point.
All right, fine.
I mentioned the success we've had here in Minnesota, and it's not like a job is over. I mean, we've got an awful lot more to do. But, I mean, we did, in fact, a couple months ago, throw out the guts of the federal curriculum, lock, stock, and barrel. The vote in the House was 118-10. I mean, when the legislators and the public came to begin to understand what was going on, it was that on one side. In the Senate, I believe there are only three senators that opposed to throwing the whole thing out. So we've had a lot of success in Minnesota because people are finding out. And what we're finding is that because our organization, Maple River, find us at edwatch.org, has been traveling around the country. I've been on your show here several times, Dr. Stan. I was at Freedom 21 conference last Friday and Saturday. I travel all over. We put emails out and so on. That the federal government and this bill now that sets up the presidential academies is now, as it's in the House of Representatives, they are starting to feel the heat. And we just found out that this today, that the people who are backing the bill all of a sudden are beginning to ask, what is going on? They had no opposition to this bill, Dr. Stan, and all of a sudden they're finding out that there's opposition coming from all over the country, and they're wondering what is happening. So I just see something. I mean, this is where we were in Minnesota 4 years ago, where the legislators started asking, what is happening? There's been no opposition to this before, and all of a sudden there is. 4 years later, that's happening at the federal level. And those of you who are listening, contact your senators, contact your congressmen, let them know that this Lamar Alexander bill that sets up these presidential academies is unconstitutional. It's a terrible bill. It's based on the federal curriculum, which is anti-American, and that you want your elected officials to be pro-America, not anti-American in their votes. So let's keep ratcheting up the heat. You know, whatever Dirksen said, I mean, he said, when I start feeling the heat, all of a sudden I see the light. So that's what we need to do.
And I think that's absolutely right. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, you have to be involved. And you're out there in the listening audience, and we know where there's lots of listeners all across the country listening on the internet, and people listening in the four or five stations up there and in the state of Washington. You need to get the information. You can go to the internet and get give that website for them.
Yes, it's simply edwatch.org. edwatch.org, edwatch.org. We've got all the information on the website.
And, of course, I can recommend Alan and his wife and certainly the senator. Was it Michelle Brockman, is it?
Michelle Brockman, state senator, just understands this extraordinarily well, travels all over the country speaking on it. She's just superb. Yep. Part of the team.
And we'll be, of course, interviewing her next week on our programs. But you need to get the information. You need to get familiar with it. If you want to get the book, fine. If you want to, whatever you want to do, if you want to get a number of the books, we'll get the price way down. So you can get them and you can distribute them. And we need, of course, to, inform the people, inform the parents what they're doing. And if they're still foolish enough to have their kids, their children in the government schools, then they ought to at least feel a sense of responsibility that their belief system is not altered by this draconian and, I believe, evil concept of a federal education that will undermine their belief in God and in family and certainly in country. And, of course, if they can convince these children that the United Nations is far better than America, then what sort of world will there be a generation from now? And they're really after the minds of the children. And specifically in this new legislation, they're setting up these institutes, which Alan's been talking about. They're after, of course, the minds of the best, the smartest, because if they can control them, then, of course, they'll be able to influence the other children. And, of course, the arguments are very, very convincing unless you simply present the other side. And once you do, the children are far smarter than most people. They can see through the lies, but, of course, they have to hear the truth, and that's what this is all about.
That's exactly right, Dr. Stan. This is not a debatable issue, and the people that are behind it know that, and they know that if there was ever an honest exchange of ideas, and if people had the information where they could consider, is this really what we want to do, that the debate would be all over. And that's what's happened, like I say, here in Minnesota. And I can't stress strongly enough that for background, people have to get the book. FedEd, the new federal curriculum, and how it's enforced. It's not my opinion. This is just what the laws say. This is what the documents say. This is how it's being implemented. I quote from the Stanford website, which writes the Stanford Achievement Test. Stanford website says that the new tests are based on the federal curriculum. It's right on their website. You can go see it for yourself. I quote from the Iowa Basics Test. I talk about the federal government's NAEP test. I quote from the new textbooks. But mostly I quote from the standards and the law. And it's all laid out. But this is what gives you listeners the background so that you're in a position to call your senator, your congressman, and say, hey, these new presidential academies are going to be teaching the federal curriculum. It's anti-American. I don't want to see you be part of an anti-American effort. And that's what our elected officials have to realize, is that this is anti-American. And if anybody wants to run for re-election next time with an anti-American record, hey, I say go for it. But I don't think that's where they want to be.
And I really think, of course, here in America, where supposedly we have freedom of speech, and yet, of course, they have a NAEP test. And this is the test they're going to give the students to find out if they've done a good job in brainwashing them. And now, isn't it a federal crime for anybody to talk about or reveal what's on that test?
That No Child Left Behind made it a felony to disclose any question on the NAEP test.
What about freedom of speech? I mean,
that's what I say. What happened to freedom of speech? And, of course, the whole idea where the federal government now is going to dictate what is true, what our values should be, and so on. How can a teacher have freedom of speech when the federal government is telling that teacher what that teacher has to teach? You know, it doesn't work. So, and on the NAEP test, over two-thirds of the questions are personal questions or demographic questions. So I can have a felony charged against me just for revealing one of the demographic questions or one of the personal questions that are on the test. Most of the test has nothing to do with academics.
Because they're really not interested in, of course, teaching children to read and write and arithmetic and geography and geometry. They're interested in changing their attitudes. Isn't that what it's really about?
It really is. And so, for instance, and I'm going to describe some of the questions because it's not a felony to describe the questions, but it is a felony to give the questions. But you have questions, for instance, that are going to ask children about Mother Earth, capital M, capital E, and how the Earth is our mother, and how we're brothers with all of the animals and the rocks and so on.
In other words, if you don't believe in Mother Earth and you don't believe, of course, we're one one with nature, that these pagan beliefs, the Indian religions, why, of course, if you don't believe those things, why your teachers have failed?
That's right. I mean, the test is calculated to put people who have traditional beliefs, that is, that our job, for instance, is to be good stewards of the environment. But the way I put it is, are we stewards of the environment, or is the environment the steward of us? And the environmentalism in the NAEP makes the world or the environment the steward of us, not us the stewards of the environment. So they have it exactly upside down. And so if your school is teaching the correct view of the environment, then your students are going to be at a disadvantage on the federal government's achievement test, and that's it's set up for that purpose.
Well, one time, of course, everybody in America knew we were a Christian nation. You didn't have to be a Christian to be a good American, but you had to know our history. It was built upon Christian principles, the laws of America. Blackstone's commentaries on the laws of America, on the laws of England, was based upon the Bible, and that was the basis of American law. So everything really centered around God, and we were a Christian nation. And then, of course, thanks to the Supreme Court and the things that changes they were able to make during the Vietnam War, while our attention was diverted by the people coming home with their arms and legs blown off and the flag-draped coffins. And we were watching that as they took God and prayer and anything reference to religion out of our schools. And so they converted us to really an atheist nation. But the next step in the paradigm is to the pagan beliefs that you're describing, where we are one with the rocks and the trees. And this all comes out of the Global Biodiversity Assessment Program that came out of the Second Earth Summit in 1992. And people don't understand. There really are people who do have an agenda. They know exactly what they're doing, but they don't want the American people to know.
That's exactly right. This is paganism. It is pantheism, belief that God is everything, that God is the rocks, that God is the streams, that God is the animals, that we are God, that everything is God, and that when we die, we are reunited with the great oneness, like a drop of water falling into the ocean, that everything is God. And so our children are being indoctrinated with a religious view, and it's hostile to Christianity. It's a pagan, pantheistic view. It's sometimes called Gaia religion. Gaia comes from the Greek, which means earth. Gaia religion is the view that everything, that nature is God, that all created things are God. And so, in a sense, for the evolutionists, it allows them to have their cake and eat it too, because they believe in Darwin, but they believe that nature is God. So they're creationists and evolutionists at the same time. But it is a religious position, and it is being forced upon our children in all kinds of ways, including being in the NAEP test. By the way, Harcourt Brace and Company has in their new literature book for the eighth graders, they have a play that the kids are to put on, and the play is called Be Nice to Your Mother Earth, capital M, capital E. And the whole play that the kids put on is pantheism, that Earth is God, and Earth is our mother, and we're all one with the Earth, and we're all brothers with the rocks and the animals and all this stuff. So it's everywhere.
And, of course, this is a religion. In other words, we can't mention the God of the Bible, but we can mention the other religion. And you only need to read the writings of these people in the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report. If you haven't read it, you need to get it, or at least the summary in our Sustainable Development Syllabus. Jeannie Soderman spent 3 months going through the 1,142 pages and crystallizing it, and the intense hatred that is expressed there for Christianity, and, of course, for the Jewish religion, and, of course, for the Muslim religion. And that's why, of course, we are at war with the Muslim world. And we'll call off the Muslims, and then, of course, the Christians and the Jews will be next. And you don't think that they know exactly what they're doing. You need to read what they have written, and we have it all available here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, you need to get this book, though, FedEd, to see how clever these people are. Using, of course, the educational system, the belief that the average American has that when we're told, oh, we're going to return control to the parent and to the local school board, and it was all a lie. They knew it was a lie, but, of course, they don't want the parents to know that. They want to think that this all has to do with no child left behind. A beautiful slogan, but the reality is, of course, no child will be allowed to believe in God and family and country. No child will be left behind.
Yep. No child left behind to be free.
Right.
No child left behind to be an American. No child left behind to have the rights of life and the right to property and the right of gun ownership and all of these things. Dr. Stan, you mentioned before how we as a country were set up as a republic, as a representative form of government. And, of course, that's exactly true. That's what it is. But just to illustrate how the backers of the system deceive the public and other legislators, let me explain that they have redefined the word republic so that it fits into their radical view. And as you correctly pointed out, a republican system is representative government. But the way they define republic is they say that the notion of the republic comes from the Greeks and the Romans, which is a half-truth. A lot of this is half-truth. And that the Greeks and the Romans believed that the good of the whole society is more important than individual rights. And so individual rights come second, and the good of society, as determined by government, comes first. And so they say that republicanism means that individual human rights are secondary, and the good of the whole, the good of the country, are primary. And so they define the word republic to mean tyranny.
And
this is par for the course for these radicals. And so they use these terms that you and I and most Americans see as important positive terms, but they redefine them to fit their radical worldview.
And, of course, that's exactly what they want. They want, of course, everybody subservient to the state. That's what socialism really is. And anybody who thinks that there was really a redistribution of the wealth in Russia or there's redistribution of the wealth under socialism doesn't understand. It is really an elitist system by whether a ruling elite, a massive military, and a Gestapo type of KGB, a force to keep the people in line, and then, of course, everybody else enslaved, and gradually lower the living standards of the average individual as you, of course, reward the government employees with ever higher pay raises and pensions and benefits. And, of course, then everybody would want to work for the government because that's the way you got ahead in Russia, and that's the way you get ahead in communist China, and that's, unfortunately, increasing the way that it is here in the United States. Let's get back to an idea, a place where the government is to serve the people rather than to rule them. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Give us a call if you have a question or comment. Our guest is Professor Alan Quist, his book, Fed Ed, and if you haven't read it, shame on you. You need to get it. You need to read it. You need to memorize it. You need to get it in other people's hands. And as I say, if you want to distribute these, we'll get the price down where you can because we want you to get the information out. And so it's so vitally important that you help us disseminate the truth about this new educational program and what it is really about. Do not believe a word they say. Of course, read what they're doing. Read their material. Read Alan's book. Based upon the textbooks which are to be used and what it actually says in these programs, this is a whole stealth process. They're frightened to death, the American people will learn, because they have no opposition now. If the American people, if the parents of America could understand what they're doing to their children, why they'd rise up in righteous indignation.
That's exactly true, Dr. Stan. The truth always precedes freedom. And the public simply needs to know what is true, and that's the same with the legislators. The legislators need to know what's true. That's why getting the information out is so important. And as I've said before, this is not my opinion. Here's what the documents say. And all of the reviews that are out on there on the book, and there are a bunch, none of them in any way suggest that anything in the book is inaccurate. Well, they can't because this is just, I mean, here are the facts, folks, but the newspapers aren't going to print it, apart from good Americans like Dr. Stan. The radios aren't going to cover it, the TVs aren't going to cover it, and so you have to get the information from the people who have studied it, and that's what edwatch.org does, and I just thank God that I have been able to be part of this very, very wonderful organization.
Well, first, the Maple River Educational Association, is that right, Maple River Educational?
That's right, Maple River Education Association, and on our website, we're edwatch.org. So, you know, it's interesting, too, with this book now, we're already having to talk about going into the third printing, and it's only been out about 9 months. And, you know, it's interesting, Dr. Stan, I don't get any phone calls from anybody who say, you know, I think there's something inaccurate here. I don't get any emails. I don't get any letters from anybody who says, you know, I don't think it's totally right because, I mean, the book speaks for itself. And it just lays out what's happened, and we just have to know this so that we have a basis for action.
Well, now, what do they do with the Second Amendment that gives the people the right to keep and bear arms to protect themselves, you know, from not only from the excesses of crime, but also from the excesses of government, because that's why they put the Second Amendment in the Constitution, as it was the rights of Englishmen to defend themselves from the king.
Well, the curriculum itself on government is written by this one NGO, Center for Civic Education. They never face a voter and so on. And so they wrote the curriculum for government, which they call the National Standards for Civics and Government. And it's a book of about 200 pages and so on. And you ask so when I read this kind of book, okay, here are the guidelines for teaching government. I mean, I teach government. I have for many years. And one of the things I look at is I want to say, okay, what position do they take on the Second Amendment? And so you read the national standards from beginning to end up until the appendix, Dr. Stan, and what you find is that the Second Amendment is never mentioned once, never mentioned in passing. It is out of sight and out of mind. Now, if you go to the appendix, you can read the Declaration of Independence for yourself, and of course nobody does that, but the Declaration of Independence itself, and then you can read the Constitution itself, and if you read the Constitution and you read Amendment 2, then you're going to find the right to bear arms. But in the text and in the instructions then on how you're supposed to teach this, the Second Amendment is out of sight and out of mind.
What about the Tenth Amendment, this idea of limiting the power of the government so people can be free?
Well, the Tenth Amendment is included in the standards, but then you also want to look at the textbook, which is called We the People, the Citizen, and the Constitution, because the textbook gives you the detail on how you're supposed to teach these things. And so you go to the textbook called We the People, written by the same organization, Center for Civic Education. They have a monopoly on this, Dr. Stan. They are set up by federal law. I didn't get a chance to put in a bid. No other civics teacher in the country had a chance to put in a bid. They have a monopoly. They wrote the textbook, too. So you look at the textbook and ask the question, okay, how are you going to deal with the Tenth Amendment in the textbook? This is what they do. They divide the textbook into three parts. The first part is historical, what happened in the past. The second part is what's the situation today, what are our basic rights today, and the third part is what can we expect in the future. Okay, these are the three parts. So you look at the first part, and you find that the Tenth Amendment in the first part is included. By the way, national sovereignty is never mentioned once. It doesn't exist at all until you get to the Declaration of Independence in the appendix, in the text it's never mentioned. But the Tenth Amendment is mentioned in the historical development part. It's not given nearly as much attention as it should, but at least it's mentioned. But then you get to the center part, and the center part is called, what rights do we have under the Constitution today? Okay, where are we today? And this part, where are we today, what are our rights today, doesn't mention the Second Amendment, doesn't mention the Ninth Amendment, and doesn't mention the Tenth Amendment. So you ask the question, okay, how can you deal with the Bill of Rights, which is what the middle section of the book is all about, how can you deal with the Bill of Rights and never mention the Second Amendment, the Ninth, or the Tenth? Well, that's what they do. The Tenth Amendment is out of sight and out of mind. Okay, then you get to the last part of the book, where are we going in the future? And again, the Tenth Amendment is never mentioned, but here's where the Universal Bill of Rights comes in, and here's a Universal Declaration of Human Rights comes in, and here's where the world citizenship comes in, and Chapter 37 ends with the question, do you think world citizenship is possible in our lifetime? So you've gone from the states having rights in the first part to the second part, to the federal government having rights, to the third part where all the rights are going to be in on an international level, Universal Declaration, and even the United States isn't a separate sovereign nation. Well, so that's the way it's dealt with.
We're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. Our guest has been Alan Quist, his book, Fed Ed, and let me recommend it to you. And if you want more information, call us at 1-800-544-8927. Alan, thank you so much for being with us, and give my best to Julie.
Dr. Stan, I will do that, and thank you, and God bless you, and keep
you
up the good work.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
And, of course, if we'd had Alan on further, he would tell you that this is a spiritual battle, and he speaks eloquently on this because it really is a spiritual battle. This is the time I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and quite frankly, we need your help so we can continue bringing you this program on this station and gradually expanding our coverage across America. And, of course, a lot of our listeners are being hit by the economic pinch. And so if there's any way you can help, we'll certainly appreciate it. But we ask you, of course, to contact us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV War. If you'd like to get the book, some of our other books on education, our four tape sets on education, our interviews with Alan Quist. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. And please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you. Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the mountains overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We're hopefully going to have with us on the line here in just a moment Mr. Randy Thomason from Sacramento. And, of course, Randy is out there on the front lines of the battle trying to keep people abreast of the progressive moral degeneracy of Sacramento, the legislation that's being passed up there. And, of course, we've got him on the line right this minute. Hi, Randy. How are we doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan.
How goes the battle?
Well, the battle is, the light is getting exposed. You know, this whole budget debate right now, where the Democrats want to raise taxes and the Republicans want to cut spending. And the question is, okay, who's holding up the budget here? Well, it's the Democrats. You may have seen the story. They were discussing how they want to hold up the budget, delay it, make things harder on Californians. And they didn't know that there was an open microphone, and the conversation about their strategy to delay the budget was caught, and it was top stories today. So, you know, the light exposed some of the darkness there.
Well, now, of course, what happens? It sounds to me like they're trying to abort the recall of Governor Davis by saying a lot of these ballots, a lot of the recall petitions were illegally collected. Is there anything to that? Did they actually pack this organization that was going to collect the signatures with people who are not citizens? You know, is this whole thing a scam? Or where we once again just get to the point where we almost think that something's going to happen, and then we find out we've lost? They're like appointing a Supreme Court justice, you know, that we know is going to be good, and then they betray us?
No, I think the lawsuits from Gray Davis's attorneys are much ado about nothing. He's got the 3 out of 4 lawsuits already have failed or been delayed. And I expect that within the next 48 hours, we're going to have a certification of the recall for the ballot. And once it's certified, it's certified. And all signs are pointing that that's the direction it's going to do. Governor Davis's attorneys, his delaying tactics are not working. And there's actually going to be a lot of media at the state capitol tomorrow in front of the Secretary of State's office. I expect sometime Thursday we'll have a certification by Davis cohort Kevin Shelley, our Secretary of State, who's very nervous about what he's done. He has tried to delay the counting, but he lost in court, and so he's trying to do things right finally. I expect a certification sometime this week.
Well, it's really very interesting. Today I got a call, and somebody called and said, who's the producer on the radio program? And I said, I am. Well, she starts to ask me all these questions, and I say, well, who are you? Before I give you any information, who are you? Well, I'm from Bill Simon's office, and we're updating our information. So obviously Bill Simon's is planning on running. I certainly am not very enthusiastic about him, about the way he waffled on the last issue, and really sort of a me too. But I'm hoping and praying that we're going to be able to get, if there is a recall, there will be somebody there who really believes in America and the Constitution, and is certainly not going to compromise his principles with the idea of picking up a few votes.
Right. I expect these people to run. Daryl Issa, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Bill Simon, and perhaps Tom McClintock. I think Tom McClintock has shown the least waffling and is the most principled among everyone. I could not personally accept Arnold Schwarzenegger because, unfortunately, he's got a lot of problems on moral issues.
I know that. Unfortunately, you know, sometimes people vote for the Terminator or for the image rather than knowing anything he really believes in his moral standards. And so you expect Simon McClintock, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and who will be the fourth one?
Well, ISA, and actually ISA is the first one. He's already got his own website. He launched for governor on Monday, and he is the front runner because he's put his name out and he's put the money out for the collection of recall signatures. But you know, it's an exciting time to be a Californian. I'd say it's the worst time in California, and it's the best time because it's always darkest before the dawn, and there's lots of people who want a change in government, and it's exciting to see.
Well, of course, you know, Darrell Issa, as I remember, is pro-life and he's pro-gun, and do we know anything about more about him other than that?
Well, he's been a pretty consistent guy in Congress. I think a lot of the guys make mistakes on some of their votes. We'll have to see. I mean, at this point, we want to take things one step at a time. One, is there going to be a recall election? I, Randy Thomason, am saying, yes, there will be. It will be this fall. All the signs are pointing to that, and I believe my words will be confirmed within 48 hours.
All right, fine. We're going to hold you to that next week. Everybody out there in the listening audience, I want you to write down in your blotter, Randy Thomason says there's going to be a recall, and if there isn't next week, why? Well, let's hope and pray he's right. Go ahead, Randy. Well, tell us
yes,
about some of the other legislation.
I'm saying I think it's a 99% chance that's going to happen. Now, what's happening is also, I want to say that this recall is good news in the sense some awful bills at the state capitol in Sacramento could be stopped. Gray Davis is very nervous about the homosexual marriage bills and the transsexual agenda bills that are heading his way. And there are four of those bills. We talked about it on the program. And so far, Governor Davis is undecided, and the homosexual activists are sounding fatalistic about it. So those are good combinations. Now, none of this is going to matter unless you do your part and call Governor Gray Davis this month. I'd like to give you the phone number. Even if you called Governor Gray Davis earlier, call him now and say, hey, I want you to oppose the homosexual marriage bills and these crazy transsexual agenda bills that are going to hurt innocent people. The phone number for Gray Davis is 916-445-2841, 916-445-2841. Those bill numbers are all AB bills, AB-205, AB-17, AB-196, and AB-458. And those bills are posted on our website at SaveCalifornia.com. But Dr. Stan, it's an exciting time to be a Californian, I'll tell you that.
Well, of course, one of the big things is, of course, Gray Davis has signed legislation that, of course, would take away the ability to keep and bear arms. Do you know anything about that? Somebody called me about that the other day.
Oh, hard to hear you. What was the issue?
Some of the gun legislation that he signed that would, you know, would certainly restrict the right of the people to keep and bear arms. Is there any truth to that? That we have some legislation that is now in the courts, but it would severely restrict our gun rights?
Well, I'm not sure what the caller was talking about, but I do know Governor Gray Davis generally has a record of suppressing rights of gun owners. He's been bad on life issues. He's been bad on parental rights. He's been bad on religious freedom. And he has pushed the homosexual marriage agenda as far as he possibly can at this point. And so there are a lot of people upset with Gray Davis on the financial issues. But also, when they think about the children and the moral issues, they're upset about that, too. I think that's why so many people signed the recall petition in the first place.
All right. Well, these are exciting times, and I'll tell you what I think, that the establishment is frantic. They don't want us, because ordinarily they would control both political candidates, both the Democrat and the Republican, and it doesn't matter which one loses, their man always wins, and that's the way the game is played. And this is something they can't control. That's why you see all these articles about, oh, terrible, it's going to cost so much for the recall election, and oh, terrible, you know, this is not the democratic process, and terrible, you know, this is just going to aggravate the state's problems. And watch what the media is doing now. They're really against this grassroots movement to try to get responsible people into government.
And my response is it would be terrible to allow Gray Davis to continue ruining California. We need a pro-family governor, and it's not going to be him or any of his friends. And Dr. Stan, I do want to invite the people listening in California to come to Sacramento this Saturday. 10 a.m., there's going to be a big rally on the Capitol North steps. And this is going to be a recall rally. It's going to be celebrating the petitions, the collection of them, and likely by Saturday there'll be an official certification and may even be a date chosen for the election. This is between now and Saturday, we're going to hear a lot about the recall in the news. But a big recall rally, 10 o'clock at the state capitol in Sacramento this Saturday.
All right, and remember the website is SaveCalifornia.com. At SaveCalifornia.com, Randy needs your help. He's out there on the front lines working, of course, to keep the people of this state abreast of what's really going on, the information you're not going to get from your local newspapers and most local radio or television stations. God bless you. Thanks so much, Randy.
Hey, Dr. Stan, Lord bless you as you follow him.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, let's go to our good friend Brad Dacus from the Pacific Justice Institute. Hi, Brad. What's going on?
Thanks, Dr. Stanley. I tell you, right now we're in the middle of a major battle down in Ventura. As it turns out, I prepared to speak at the City Hall building and give a full presentation on the Mountain Cross issue. As it turns out, the Mountain Cross has been contested as being unconstitutional and being challenged. However, we're promised to represent the city without charge, and we weighed in and provided our legal analysis, which says that the city has a very good chance of winning if they allow their Mountain Cross to stay. So bottom line is people can keep in their prayers. The city's going to be deciding in the next week. Talked with their legal counsel and weighed in once again on it. And we at the Pacific Justice Institute have made the commitment to represent without charge, so we just don't know what they're going to do. So. People can be praying about that. We may be in a major lawsuit against the Americans United for Separation of Church and State, or on the alternative, the city council will wimp out, and there may no longer be a cross flying over Ventura. So,
well, I'll tell you what, of course, when a nation turns against God, why I think we have to realize that God eventually is going to turn against that nation. One of the churches is going to stand up. One of the Christians is going to stand up and say, this is a lot of foolishness. Let's start impeaching Supreme Court justices who vote in violation of the oath that they've taken to uphold our Constitution. God bless you. Thanks so very much. Do you want to get your telephone number and, of course, your website out there?
You bet, Dr. Stanley. Our telephone number is 888-305-9129, 888-305-9129. Reach the Pacific Justice Institute on our webpage at PacificJustice.org, PacificJustice.org, and please call us if they need help. We do all our work without charge.
God bless you. Thanks so much, Brad.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, of course, that is great, and let's see who's on line one here.
At the present
time, no, there's nobody on line one, so I'm going to have our producer go ahead and get our surprise guest for the evening. Well, it's not really a surprise. It's certainly your good friend and mine, John Loeffler, of Steel on Steel. And, of course, John has been on the front lines of this battle for many, many years, having left a secure job with all sorts of pension and benefits and health care, and with his wife and children, has went out, certainly based upon faith, and started doing talk radio because he recognized, as I do too, that the last means we have of reaching the American people is by talk radio. And of course, what he did was move to Colorado, and he became the voice of the Rocky Mountains there, and he was doing a great job. Then one of the most popular radio programs in Denver, and of course, he was doing such a good job that somebody came in and they didn't like his position telling the truth about the United Nations, and so he had to leave Denver and actually went to Idaho, where he worked for a time for Chuck Missler, and of course now he's putting on his radio program Steel on Steel every week. You can go to the Steel on Steel website, and of course you can actually get his programs on a weekly basis. It's heard here on KFER in the Monterey Bay every Wednesday evening from 7 to 8, and I always enjoy John. He always makes me smile, and his famous statement, just because you're not informed about what's going on doesn't make me a wacko. I mean, that is certainly one of my favorite statements, and it's really so true. The average individual has no idea what's going on, and when you try to tell them, they look at you as if you're a wacko, but Well, just because they don't know what's happening doesn't make he or I or you out there in the listening audience who are trying to tell people a wacko, and don't try to tell them too much. Ask them questions. Spend time asking questions. Try to get them to draw them out to find out what they're really interested in. Well, it's been very interesting. Our last three newsletters have dealt with all the new diseases that are cropping up across the world. Why? Where did SARS come from? Why did we suddenly have the West Nile virus here in the United States in 1999? And, of course, the CIA said that they thought Saddam Hussein had done it. Article in New Yorker magazine came from the CIA. They said, oh, yeah, it was Saddam Hussein. Is that really true? Did Saddam Hussein launch a viral attack against America in 1999, as the CIA suggests in that article in New Yorker magazine by Richard Preston? Or, of course, was this to cover something else? Why was it that Hanta occurred in an Indian area where Indians lived here in the United States, but no place else? Where did Ebola come from, and Marburg disease, and Lassa fever, which occurred in 69, the first cases, never before seen in the world? And where did Lyme disease come from? And, well, of course, if you get our latest newsletter, and of course you're welcome to pull it down off the internet, or if you want a free copy and you haven't gotten our letter before, we'll send you one. If you promise, of course, to copy it and get it into other people's hands. And we've had excellent results with people passing these out because it provokes people's interest and it gives you something to talk about and raises some very, very frightening questions. Well, right now we have on the line from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, Mr. John Leffler. Hi, John. How are you doing?
I have a very frightening question for you. What happens when a most immovable object is hit by a most irresistible force?
An
immovable object is hit by an irresistible force.
We got real problems.
Yes, there's an indescribable bang.
Oh, very good. Well, anyway, of course, John, of course, always has something to sort of liven up the conversation. So tell us basically what your take is on what's going on today. In fact, are we still going to be doing that program on Thursday this week?
I honestly don't know if we're going to do it, but I don't know when. Constance has a trial schedule, so I'm going to find out tomorrow. What we're talking about for the listeners here is a roundtable discussion again to just say, where is the New World Order at? You know, we started 20 years ago talking about all of this stuff, and is it prodding along on schedule, or are other things sidetracking it, that type of thing?
No, I think that they're way ahead of schedule. I think that, you know, of course, they're teaching our children, and most of our children just don't know what's wrong with a one-world government. I had a very nice conversation with a young Christian student on Sunday, and Saturday, and his remark was, well, of course we're going to have a world government. I mean, what's wrong with a world government? Wouldn't it be wonderful if everybody were free like we are?
It would be if everybody were free, but the world government they're envisioning is not modeled on the one that made us all free.
Absolutely not. In fact, it will be an all-powerful government that will regulate every aspect of our lives. And, of course, all of the freedom can be suspended at any time because under this system and model of government, freedom comes from government, not from God.
Right. It's interesting to note the rumblings going on in the financial community now. We just picked up on them last week during the Financial Sense News Hour. And that was financial planners are getting more and more leery of what they are willing to tell their clients about where to invest their money or how to protect their wealth because of provisions in the Patriot Act and Homeland Security. And everybody's beginning to slowly but surely figure out. See, here's the road we're heading down right now. It's like California's in the process of self-destructing itself right now financially. But the federal government, the national level, with the Fed and everything, we're on the same road. It's the same situation. So we're coming into a point here where historically governments become incredibly abusive as they try to pump a system and keep it going, and they begin thrashing around almost like the evil eye of Sauron in Lord of the Rings, you know, looking around trying to find what it can plunder and seize in order to keep the thing going. So very shortly, I know Jim mentioned he expects to see asset and currency controls get slapped in increasing volume here as more and more people try to protect what wealth they have from confiscation in one form or another. and at the same time, advising people of how to maybe protect your wealth may now be considered subversive or terrorist activity. So we're watching freedom of speech go down the john. We're watching financial freedom go down the john. You're literally watching it, Dr. Stan, as we sit here. And the funny part is the majority of people don't understand that. And I notice Ann Coulter keeps writing in columns, not to worry, we don't have any kind of a constitutional crisis here. And I keep thinking, what planet are you living on?
Well, of course, there are a lot of good people out there, really,
sure.
that honestly believe, of course, we have a Christian administration now. It's really interested in preserving our freedom. They can justify, sending our troops overseas to the Middle East, because, after all, we have to fight the wicked terrorists. And, of course, we know that, of course, now it's coming out increasingly that Iran has been involved in fighting terrorism. What planet have they been on? Financing terrorism. Iran has always financed terrorism ever since we brought that regime to power back in 79. And of course, nobody ever points out that the one country that we are not opposing is the major source of funding for this whole terrorist movement, and that's Saudi Arabia. In fact, on Face the Nation on Sunday, Senator Graham was interviewed, he was talking about what they're not allowed to say in this new report that's going to be released this week. And he said, you know, we're not allowed. Of course, they blacked out, censored this whole part about a major country that funded the Al-Qaeda movement and the 19 terrorists both before the attack and after the attack. And, of course, the questioner said, oh, you're talking about, Senator, let's get down to it. Are we talking about Saudi Arabia? And Senator Graham said this. I'm not allowed to comment. I do not want to take a detour to the federal penitentiary on my way to running for the presidency. Now, that's what the United States Senator is saying. I can't tell you. They'll put me in prison if I tell you the truth, if I tell you that Saudi Arabia has funded Al-Qaeda since its very beginning, because, after all, of course, there are very close ties between the Bush administration and the former Bush administration with Saudi Arabia. In fact, it is the president's lawyer, law firm, that's Baker and Hoyt, who are defending the Saudi princes from the lawsuit. So on one hand, we're defending the people who, of course, financed and created this terrorist movement. On the other hand, of course, we're taking away the freedom of the American people in the name of fighting terrorism. What's wrong with this picture? Well, if people had an ounce of sense, they'd realize that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king.
Yep.
But nobody's going to tell them that because they're afraid of that knock on the door in the middle of the night.
Yep, knock on the door in the middle of the night. And we keep saying, but this is America, and we're going to spread our freedoms around the world. Well, if we don't have them, how are we going to spread them? That's going to be the...
And more of the scientists keep dying or dropping over dead or found with a bullet in their head, apparently a suicide. More and more of these biologists, it's very interesting, this one that died over the weekend. A few minutes before he was found dead, he sent an email saying, well, I'm going to do this next week or do this the end of this week. And then suddenly he's found dead with a bullet in his head.
On second thought, I'm going to commit suicide.
Right. It's sort of like Colby, the head of the CIA, who was writing his memoirs. It's going to blow the whistle on everything. And right in the middle of a dinner, he decides to take a canoe trip, out in the middle of a stormy lake. And anybody who believes that, it's got to be incredibly naive. They simply kill people. They always have, and they're doing it today. In fact, Ian Fleming wrote about it. James Bond had a license to kill. And, of course, he was trying to tell the American people and the people of Great Britain that there was another force. It wasn't simply communism against capitalism, the West against the East. There was another force, and he called it Spectre. He died at a very young age before he was ever able to convince the American people and the people of the world that there really was this other force out there that had an entirely different agenda than either that of America or that, of course, of the Soviet Union.
Yeah, I mean, so that's the direction we're going in. I say, as I'm watching it, the terrorism war will continue. The number of wars and things we're involved in will probably continue. Look at Liberia now. The second prong will be this just massive effort. The Fed's panicking because in all of their papers and discussions, they're talking about the fact that what they're doing isn't working.
Well, of course, if you read the press, I'm reading it now, and of course, 6 months ago, every company, major company, was losing money. Their income was down, their net was down, they weren't making a profit. Now they're all making money, but the only reason they're making money is because they've devalued the dollar by 30% over the last 2 years.
Right.
Before, of course, the euro was 84 cents to the dollar. Now it's $1.18 to the dollar, so that's 16, and 18 is, what, about 34%? They've devalued the dollar. And of course, we can sell our goods more cheaply that way, and that's why China did so well, because they can undersell people. Right now, of course, with our technology, we can undersell people too. But eventually, of course, this whole thing begins to catch up with us. And what that means is, from the real purchasing point of view, our senior citizens have lost about 34% of the purchasing power of their dollar. They don't feel it just yet, but give it down the line. Of course, whenever you begin playing with the value of a currency, why, you get into trouble. And then, of course, you have to slap on your exchange controls, because people, as in South America and any country, want to get their money into a safe haven, and they can't allow that. But don't you worry. They're way ahead of us. They already have the two-tiered money system, the new funny, the funny colored money there. They know exactly what's going to happen. They're so much smarter than we are, John.
No, they're not.
Well, at least they're far-sighted. They have the power. We know what's happening. It's just a matter of how do we reach the American people and make them realize they're being lied to. In fact, I had a very interesting interview earlier in the day in my early morning program, and this woman was talking, and she said the difference between the United States and Russia today is, in Russia, everybody knows all the news is censored, and it's all propaganda, and it's all lies. In America, the people don't know that, and they believe they're getting the truth from the media.
Right, yeah. That's why the alternative media of all different sizes and shapes is a real spanner in the works, so to speak, of the whole establishment, because it really it does put a kink in the whole thing. People will ask me, I get letters from or emails from listeners on my show, and they'll say, well, what is it we do? I said, well, you know, it's different for everybody else. I don't think this juggernaut's going to be stopped. It has a huge momentum right now. But understanding at least what's happening allows you some flex room in there to be able to function, because you don't have to go blissfully off into the night and go over the cliff with everybody else. There are things you can do by understanding that. If you understand that we're headed into a real big financial debacle, that we have political situations that the way they are, And I think there are going to be some earth changes, too, there, Dario. I think we're going to be surprised. I think there's some rumblings of that in the scientific community that things are beginning to happen, and they're not quite sure yet, but they see signs of it in different places.
Well, now, what are you alluding to?
There are some signs that the earth, the magnetic polar shift of the earth is beginning to change now. In other words, we've known it's flipped over before. But when I talked to, was it Andrew Pike at the Royal Astronomical Society, he said they're actually believing that it's maybe starting right now.
And of course, we expect that as we approach the end times, there's going to be cataclysmic changes in everything.
This is the directions that we're going in. And as I said, it has the way you get on the way you stop a freight train is you don't stand on the track and put your hand up. You run alongside the train, climb up on the train when you can, and get up to the cab and then begin to throttle it back. That's the sort of the philosophy. But I don't think right now, you know, the problem is not that we don't have a problem. The problem is not that we don't know what the solutions to the problems are. The problem is you can't convince anybody of what the problems are.
Well, the fact that the problem is you can't even convince a lot of people that there is a problem.
That's what I mean. Yeah, exactly, that there is a problem. Must us doing something about it.
Well, of course, that's what our listeners, and I'm sure your listeners, are doing. They're aware something's out there, and they're looking for leadership. And I look over the spectrum of conservative political and religious organizations, and I see a barren wasteland. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment or two with our special guest, John Leffler. And, of course, we always welcome your calls here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, because that's what talk radio is all about. You don't want to hear just John and I talking. We'd love to hear what you think and, of course, your questions for our special guest tonight, John Steel on Steel Leffler. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is sort of the program I really enjoy because we have no fixed program at all. We're just sort of chatting with an old friend, and we have a few thousand people listening in out across America. But before we go any further, I want to tell you how to get John's programs. If you want a smile, if you want something that gives you sort of a good feeling to know that we've got great people on our side, you want to listen to Steel on Steel, how can people do that, John?
Send lots of money. Nothing less than $100 denomination. I'm sorry, wait a minute, we devalued it. Make it $150 now.
Okay.
They go on the World Wide Web to steelonsteel.com. That's the website. It's steel like the metal. There's no E at the end of each of the words. Steel on Steel, one word. And they can listen online 90 minutes a week. We try to be real hard-hitting and make sure that the program is saturated with information. And we rotate through a whole variety of topics, as you well know. And what's sort of interesting is, you know, I listen to some of your shows because we can hear them here in the Northwest. And we're always different. We're always taking different slices out of it between us. But one way or another, we're covering some of the same areas, but with a different perspective on it. You know, so it's always interesting.
Well, you know, the thing is, how fortunate I feel we are to have, our hour up there on the American Christian Network, and there are four stations. Sometimes there are five stations. I suspect this time of year we're not getting full five stations, but we got our four stations, and they have a pretty good impact there in Central Washington and Eastern Washington.
Actually, it's the other way around. This year you get the five because it's longer daylight.
All right.
It's in the wintertime you lose the... there's a 50,000 watt station in the Yakima that you lose. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's see. We have a note here. Does John believe there will be a further exodus of people and our businesses from California? Now, you don't live in California. You live up in God's country. But what do you see happening to California, just from the perspective of somebody who lives in Coeur d'Alene?
Well, I just talked to a lady who from Orange County who just packed up a year ago and moved up here. She said as she was driving across the Nevada desert, she said every time she thought of Governor Gray Davis, she began cackling in joys of laughter, you know, because what's happening in California is symptomatic of what will happen to the rest of the country, in that California has tried to pay for every conceivable social program that you can think of and to soak business for doing it. And so... what's happened is every time you turn around in California, there's a fee and a tax. Wait till your mileage tax kicks in there in California. Most Californians don't know about that one. It's already passed your state legislature and been signed into law. I just don't think it goes into effect for a couple of years. But that's where you get taxed on the number of miles you drive every year, and you know what it's like. I lived in California for 15 years, so you know what it's like.
Well, of course, this is really such an exciting time to live here, because of course, if you see what's happening up in Sacramento, they really can't increase taxes. If they do, why more and more of the industries will move out of California, and we've already lost a considerable amount of our tax base, and of course, they're sort of in a lose-lose situation. They're going to have to bite the bullet and begin cutting back on all these social welfare programs. And it's so fascinating to see what's happening in Germany today, where, you know, this has been the socialist paradise, you know, and there you get, all these pensions, and you get to work 4 days a week, and of course, you get all the vacations, and you get all the health benefits, and about, 40% of your income goes to pay for all these benefits, but everybody loves it. And now suddenly the socialists are in power, and they're saying, hey, we're no longer competitive. We've got the highest labor costs in the world, and we're just going to cut back on it. And if you don't like it, too bad. And maybe why don't you move over to Liberia or something? And so they're really beginning to cut back on all these benefits, and the labor unions are screaming, and they're saying, all right, then we just won't have any jobs at all. And so the labor unions are betraying the people, and the government's betraying the people. And of course, they're doing what they should have done a long time ago. There is no utopia. These things aren't working. The Germany cannot get its economy going. They cannot be competitive in the world.
Yeah.
And, of course, they're doing what they should do and, of course, what we should do right here. And they're beginning to dramatically slash all of these welfare benefits. And, of course, this is the only way they're ever going to be able to get their economy back to any sort of a sound basis. It's a lot cheaper to produce a Mercedes-Benz or a BMW in Greenville, South Carolina, than it is in Bavaria.
Yep. And that's the same thing here, by the way. You know, we talk about the devaluing of the dollar to help our exports, but understand that that doesn't necessarily mean jobs here either. You know, a lot of our jobs have gone offshore because of things like NAFTA and GATT. If you've noticed, it's really very instructive to understand that governments generally renege on almost all of the promises they make to their people. This is historically true. The U.S. government has reneged on every single substantial financial promise it has ever made to its citizens. Only it tended to cover it up and how it did it and bounce back from it and packaged it under different recovery acts and whatever. But sooner or later, it waffles on the decisions. And what we've been doing for 50 years, actually probably since the Depression, is just rolling the obligations forward of each generation, letting them pile up. And so now the Generation Xers are going to be the ones that get the privilege of paying for this, Dr. Stan. But the baby boomers, my crowd, are going to get to retirement and discover there is no retirement. They were lied to. They put into the Social Security fund for a whole lifetime, and they'll be lucky if they get anything out of it. Or if they do, due to the devaluing of the dollar, that'll be worth anything.
Well, I want you to know I really appreciate it. I'm, of course, spending your retirement right now. I received my Medicare and my Social Security. And, of course, the thing is that there's not any money there. Everybody's talking about the $450 billion deficit George Bush is going to have, biggest deficit of all time, and they never mention he's going to steal. And I'm not saying he's any worse than any of the others, but he's going to steal $250 to $300 billion from Social Security and Medicare and spend that as well. So you're really talking pretty close to $750 billion just this year. And things are really going to get bad, you know, when we go to war with Iran and Syria and certainly with North Korea. In fact, I noticed 60 Minutes this weekend had a rerun of the program on what a terrible guy Kim Jong-il is in the North Korea. And sure, he's a terrible guy. We've been keeping him in power by, of course, sending him massive amounts of food to feed his army and oil to keep his army warm. And, you know, if we weren't subsidizing him and building nuclear plants for him, why, he would have toppled a long time ago. And if we just told China to quit, keeping him in power and the Russians, why, of course, he would have fallen. But, of course, we keep him in power, and we even may go to war with him. One of the best enemies that money can buy. Let's go to Jim, who's calling here from Santa Cruz. Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan.
Hey, I haven't heard from you in a long time.
Yeah, I've been busy. I just wanted to comment that, you know, I'm concerned about how none of our political leaders, you know, or anyone in the mainstream media is talking about the trade deficit and how that this is playing a role in all this, you know, and how that even in California, the Democrats here aren't talking about the trade deficit, and they support the so-called, you know, free trade policy, and you know, now there's no money to fund their social programs.
You're absolutely right, and we're talking, you know, about what, pretty close to $500 billion trade deficit we're going to have this year, and every year it goes on like this. And of course, see, what happens is, of course, they get the trade deficit, and then they have to, what are they going to do? You're sitting over in China, and you got all these dollars. What are you going to do with them? I mean, you can't sell them, you can't hatch them into something. So you invest it in the United States, you invest it in U.S. bonds, but of course you invest it in U.S. bonds, and the value of the dollar goes down 34% over 2 years. That isn't a very good investment. Maybe you're going to change over to some sort of a different investment. You're going to put it in the stock market. Well, the stock market hasn't done too well over the last few years overall. So where are you going to invest? You can buy up American factories and take them to China. But what happens if China and Japan and Germany, which own most of the fixed part of our national debt, all of a sudden decided to pull their money out of the United States? what would happen, of course, the United States, we would have to slap exchange controls on because we could not allow them to take it out or the whole central government would collapse. What are your thoughts on that, John?
Gee, that's why we have this currency coming up here, Dr. Stan.
You mean the colored currency?
Yeah, the colored funny money.
Right,
yes. Okay. Well, you know, I mean, besides that, you know, I haven't met one Democrat here in town who understands the relationship here, that the trade deficit represents a loss in our tax base. I mean, when you go to the big, you know, stores and all the stuff is made in Red China, that's money that's leaving the country instead of staying in the state of California.
Right, you're absolutely right.
From which
right.
The liberals could draw the taxes to fund their program. And none of them seem to be acknowledging that they themselves have helped to participate in the very policies that are creating the deficits.
Well, there's no country in all history that has ever spent itself into prosperity, and that's just what we're doing. And one of these days, we're going to have to pay the piper. And, of course, this is why we're trying to build a solid base of people who know there's a problem and so that they can, of course, begin giving the answers to the good people out there who just don't see what's happening, Jim. Don't get frustrated with them. Just get them to listen to Radio Liberty, okay?
Could I read a brief statement from the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8?
Sure.
It says that the Congress, let's see here, shall regulate commerce with foreign nations. Right. That's basically it right there.
Right.
So regulate commerce with foreign nations. It also says to lay duties, imposts, and excises, which shall be uniform throughout the United States. You know, it says Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, excises, which is tariffs.
Well, at one time, of course, we didn't have an income tax. We got enough money from the tariffs and impost taxes to actually fund the federal government.
But from what I understand, through various treaties like NAFTA, as I understand it, they have progressively dismantled our tariffs.
They absolutely have. What are your thoughts on what he's saying there, John?
Well, I mean, that's the whole. He's right. The whole monetary system is distorted. It is so distorted now. With not only NAFTA and GATT, but also zooming it out even further, with the manipulation the government is, our government and other governments, by the way, are involved in the gold markets and in almost every single market to try to manipulate it, to try to prop it up, to make the things go the way that it does. And why? Well, this actually does benefit the wealth of the people who make all the funny money. But it doesn't help the little guy. The little guy has to be kept in the game to keep the game going, and basically the little guy's being fleeced. So that's the bottom line of the whole thing. That's why I said in the future, you know, they're actually talking about a carry tax right now, the Fed, and a carry tax would actually devalue your money as you held it. So the longer you hold your money, the less it, you know, its value will erode away under you. And the thing, that's one of the proposals they're considering right now, because they have these all Keynesian velocity of money arguments and things like that. So, as I said, the abuses are just really kicking in right now.
And I think the thing that people don't understand is there really is an agenda, Jim. And that is, of course, to do away with our tariff barriers so that we can merge with the other countries of the Western Hemisphere and really the other countries of the world. And, of course, this is to actually redistribute income. Redistribute our income to the people of other countries, and as I love to make the statement, to raise the living standard of the average American to that of the Chinese peasant. From
each according to his ability, to each according to his need.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Anything else, Jim?
Well, yeah, just one last thing. You know, I think another issue that isn't being discussed by Alan Greenspan or you know, just in the mainstream media is the role of oil prices in our economic situation. You know, the price of diesel is at like $1.70 a gallon. You know, it's a fundamental cost in doing business, and it's a dollar too high, and nobody's talking about that. I mean, we can only drop the interest rate so low, but if oil prices are too high, what good is it going to do besides weaken the currency?
Well, right. We're in real trouble.
But never think, by the way, when you say they're not talking about it, the people that are pulling the strings are very definitely talking about it to each other. They're not talking about it to you.
That's the difference.
In other words, the game that you think that the public thinks is being played versus the game that's really being played are two different things, and that's because the public has to be kept in the game.
And I think that the biggest thing right now, Jim, it's all perception. If they can keep the American people thinking positive, they can jack up the market by pouring all this money into it to sustain it. They can keep the real estate prices from falling at least into the election next year. Then, of course, they'll get Bush back in. And, of course, you'll know whether they want Bush in by whether the economy holds together. If it holds together through November of next year, then Bush is their man. If it collapses, then watch out for Hillary. But it's all being manipulated. But I think that they want to keep Bush in because, of course, he has the support of the Christian right in this country. And, you know, if you say anything against George Bush today, well, you're going to bring the wrath of the Christian right down on you. I've always believed in many of the things that the Christian right has believed in, but of course they're wrong on supporting, putting their faith in a man or an administration. You watch not what a man says, you watch what he does.
Yeah.
And when he's doing exactly the opposite from what he promised, then of course you want to be very, very concerned. My concern is that after the election next year, there's no way they're going to be able to hold this thing together indefinitely, especially with a falling dollar, the Arab countries, the Muslim countries, are creating their own currency based upon a gold dinar. And if part of the world ever moves to gold, the dollar will lose its position as the reserve currency of the world, and then hang on to your hat have one.
There's going to be a tsunami of dollars flooding back here as people try to dump them. And that's where you're going to see the thing really kick in.
And then, of course, we'll have to have exchange controls. We'll have to have martial law and heaven. Yeah. Don't worry. Everything's in place because everything's in place, and they've got the camps already because, of course, they're ready to deal with the terrorists in America. Hey, we're going to go to Nathan. Hey, thanks so much for calling, Jim. Good to hear from you. Let's go to Nathan. Hi, Nathan. How are you doing?
Oh, listen, I absolutely agree with the previous caller, but I just disagree with him on one point. It seems to me that really it's both parties that are selling us out on this whole globalism and free trade thing. And in fact, the Republicans, as I recall, supported NAFTA and GATT far more than the Democrats did. That they were ready to give our jobs away to low-wage countries and give our sovereignty away. Really, we're facing, I think you brought it up with the administration, we're facing a situation where we have two parties, but they're both structures that are controlled more or less by the same people, and I guess you had two other candidates, Nader and Buchanan, and I don't necessarily like either one of them, but they both were making some good points about the two-party monopoly, and yet, is there any way to get out of it? Can we really get out of the two-party monopoly? I don't think so. But
well, let's get John to a point on that.
I
think this is. Remember, of course, that once we had a Whig Party in America, and that Whig Party went the way of the Dudenberg, and it disappeared. And there have been other political parties that have come, and of course have gone. And of course, the question is, once the American people could realize that we've been scammed, and we've got two parties. But, of course, they're both run by the same people. We've got the Republicrats. At that point, maybe there will be a place for a third party.
I don't know if you heard what you said, Stan, but you're probably right. It went the way of the doo-doo bird instead of Dodo.
No.
But I think the earlier description fits better. listen, there. When you were talking about the financial thing, I was thinking. See, there are three rules. It almost reminds me of the rules of thermodynamics. And the first rule basically says the game is rigged. Okay, you can't win. The second rule says you can't break even, and the third rule says you can't get out of the game. So that's pretty much what we're facing all around.
You know, there may be one way to get out of the game.
We can die.
No. Think about this. I remember a few years ago there were some targeted, strike days, where you just don't buy anything, you don't do anything, and if you get enough people to agree on this, you make a statement, you affect the stock market. I don't mean to permanently damage it, I just mean to send
it. Okay, but let me jump you real fast on this one, okay?
Yeah.
That would work under a normal, sane society. However, we are dealing now with Homeland Security.
Yeah.
and what they will say is you're being subversive, you're contrary. See, the terrorists that we're going to be talking about in the future will not be those wearing a kafia
and speaking Arabic. Those are not the ones they're thinking of in the future already.
Right. No, they're claiming they're using them now because no one in their right mind would take their side because they're so, you know.
What they're doing is they're setting precedent, and all you have to do in the future is slide the definition of what a terrorist is.
Exactly. I mean, right now we have real terrorists and have a real problem, but the problem is that they're manipulating it, using a legitimate issue for the wrong end.
Nathan, you say we have a real problem. How could it be we have all of these wicked terrorists here, our borders are open, and yet we haven't had one major terrorist attack in America since September 11th, other than the anthrax attack, and obviously that came from our own laboratories because Dick Cheney knew it was coming. Because he started on Cipro on the evening of the 11th of September, and he either knew or suspected it was coming, but he didn't tell anybody else. So if we really have this terrible threat from terrorism, how is it that, of course, you know, there have been no more terrorist attacks on America? And I will tell you why. Because, of course, they knew who all the terrorists were. They had a whole system infiltrated. Those are the 1,000 people they arrested right afterwards, and, of course, they won't tell us who they were, because they don't want Osama bin Laden to learn who we had arrested. No, they don't want the American people to know that they had been monitoring this whole thing all along. And, of course, they know where they are all throughout the world with the satellites, with the electronic technology we have, the computers, NSA, Echelon, Carnivore, you know, very... poor terrorists don't stand much of a chance. Of course, I don't have any sympathy for them, but of course, I think it's important you understand that they are giving it the perception, this terrible terrorist threat. And I simply ask you, Nathan, as an intelligent individual with our southern borders open, why haven't there been any more major terrorist attacks?
Well, let me leave off with this thought. I think that the protest idea might work.
All right, but we have to get the American people educated. That's
I think we can get people educated. We can agree or disagree on some specifics, but we all agree that there's a problem, and I think that maybe, you know, I don't think that the time has come yet when they can use Homeland Security against peaceful economic protests. Maybe it'll come in the future if we don't stand up, but I don't think it's come yet, and I think it may be the one way out of this.
There is a growing resistance to Homeland Security. I mean, they're discovering that it even affects now what a doctor does if a patient comes in and the doctor feels the patient can't drive, he'll pick up the phone, and that came up and have the Bureau revoke their driver's license or this or that or whatever. And very rapidly, what we always predicted all along is that this would be used against totally things unrelated to terrorism would be.
Indeed.
And people are discovering this, and there's sort of a growing, now wait a minute, what's going on here type of reaction on both sides.
Oh yes, on all across the spectrum. But in fact, I saw some very interesting votes on C-SPAN today. You know, there's some interesting amendments that got voted down, but it shows that there's a consciousness out there. We have to access it now.
Right.
Well, we've got to reach the American people, and Nathan, you've got to tell all your friends, start listening to our programs and John's programs and the few other people out there across America who are getting the truth out. God bless you.
Thank you
so
both.
Much. Let's go back. Is this Jim again?
Hey, Stan. Yeah, just one more time here. I just wondered if either of you guys wanted to comment on that cartoon that ran in the L.A. Times that shows the picture of the from Vietnam where the officer is executing the communist insurgent. But in the cartoon, the insurgent is George Bush, and the executioner is labeled, he has the label politics on his back. Have you guys seen that?
No, I haven't.
No? Oh, man.
Well, I think if you suggesting any harm come to the president, we'll get you a visit from the Secret Service and maybe a prolonged jail time. So you better not say anything against the president.
Yeah, they are being investigated. So I saw it on the news, but I saw the picture, and I was shocked by it. But, you know, George W. Bush, who does have some credibility problems right now, is being depicted in the picture as the communist insurgent is being executed.
Well, I think that you have to realize, of course, that George Bush is simply a front for the people who control him. His last press conference was an embarrassment. He couldn't even, call on individual reporters in the audience there to get up and ask a question. They had given him the list of people who he to ask. The reporters had prepared questions. He had a prepared answer. They're afraid to turn him loose in the press conference. George Bush is simply a front for the people who surround him. And of course, this whole thing now, gee, I didn't know what was in my State of the Union message. Somebody should have read it beforehand. You have to understand the president is simply a creation of the people who mold our reality. What are your thoughts on that, John?
Well, I mean, that's what it's been all along. That's why we talk about the two-party system, but the two parties pretty much agree on most of everything, believe it or not. They all agree that big government is good, that we need more controls, that the electorate should be locked out of the process. What they just disagree on are a few of the facts in terms of it. As you know, to bring it full circle, we were talking about California. California is literally going to become a welfare state, and that will be, to quote the environmentalist, a most unsustainable situation because of the fact that what is happening is businesses are fleeing the state. We have a cutlery company moving from San Diego right here to Post Falls, Idaho. They're fleeing out because they can't operate. You can't regulate them to death, fee them to death. That's the new little trick, is to charge fees every time you turn around. And in the whole process, Dr. Stan, if you've ever watched these little companies get feed or cited for this, it's a whole process. It's nothing but an extortion mechanism. It doesn't improve the environment. It doesn't make things better. And literally, it's amazing. The state assembly in California is literally where the inmates are running the asylum because there is no consciousness whatsoever. And then even in your energy shortage in California is something that your state created. Okay, this is not an artificial, a thing that happened or whatever. It was a deliberate attempt. It was an environmentalist. Remember, the environmentalists would say, if you don't build it, they won't come, that type of thing. Well, they didn't build it, but they did come, and that's why you have the shortages. I know of one of our listeners in Arizona to my show. They own a dairy, only they're on the Arizona side of the Colorado River, and every drop of milk they produce is sold back into California. And the reason they relocated there is they don't have all the horrible regulations that you have in California, and they're operating quite nicely, and they sell back into California. So once again, the Californians there losing the income tax, you see.
And of course, our producer just noted that Las Vegas is growing by 6,000 or 7,000 people a week. 6,000 or 7,000 people a week are moving. Where do you think they're moving from to Las Vegas? And I think that it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with this recall. And, of course, if we do replace our governor, can we get somebody in who will be fiscally responsible and begin cutting back on all the gravy train that they have up in Sacramento? You know, they say, gee, we're short on money, but how many of the legislators get a free SUV or a Cadillac to drive? And why don't we just make them buy their own car and pay like the rest of us have to? Why should there be all the perks for the politicians? Why, of course, that's, of course, how you buy their support. Well, I want somebody up there who's more interested in the people of California than the politics of California. Anything else you want to say, Nathan or Jim?
No, that's it.
Okay, God bless you. And let's give John the chance to make a closing remark because we're about out of time.
Well, you know what? We all go through life and sooner or later we die. Our goal is to go through life and get towards God. The world's been through troubled periods before. Even in the end times, when Scripture says the trouble gets really pretty bad, God does have a way for people who are looking to Him for protection and things of that nature. So I tell people, it's never a time of panic. You know, it's not a time of panic. And no matter what happens, we have an alternative, and God always sees to it that He will provide for us. And He really doesn't care about currencies. He's not hindered by them or things of that nature. But on the other hand, you don't have to be stupid and blunder forward into the night.
All right, fine. Well, thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure. And it is a spiritual battle. It's being fought on the political and ideological battlefield. And if you don't have a personal relationship with our Lord, why, at least give it a consideration. Who knows? Maybe there really is something to this. Maybe your life can be transformed. Anyway, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
It's been really fun, Dr. Stan. We'll see you. Maurice Smith said to say hi.
Okay, fine. Bye-bye. And of
bye-bye.
Course, that was John Leffler. Hope you enjoyed it. Steelonsteel.com. And, of course, remember our telephone number if you'd like to get in touch with us, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our ministry, for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow, when we'll be back with you once again with a series of exciting programs, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.